everyone. Welcome to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at Purple Row. I'm here along with the chief editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. You know, I think my title changes every single time. The main editor, the chief editor, the head editor.
I don't know what to call you. We should make an official title. I mean, you're listed as what, a manager on the staff credentials at the bottom of the...
I cite myself in email as the managing editor.
Editor, okay.
I'm kind of enjoying hearing what... I mean, I'm hoping for, like, you know, like the head honcho and, you know, the king of the forest and stuff like that coming up.
The head rear admiral of Purple Row.
The head rear admiral.
Major General Andrew Martin.
I am a very model of a modern Major General.
I should actually cite, this is the edition for Monday, March 28th, 2011. This is the last show we're doing before the start of the regular season this Friday. We will be back to preview the next week's action next Monday, April 4th. Today we're going to talk to Andrew Fisher of Purple Row, who had a chance to go down to spring training and hang out down there for a little bit and get the insights that he had down there. But first, the two of us, being Andrew Martin and I, will talk about some of the hot and cold players, kind of the last little look we're going to get at some of these guys before we break camp. And the Rockies made a bunch of cuts today, kind of the last few. There's still a couple official things that have to be done. They have to add Jason Giambi to the roster and so forth. But that'll probably get worried about in a couple days. They optioned down Matt Daly and Eric Young Jr., both of whom were kind of fringe bubble candidates maybe to make a roster spot. So let's talk a little bit about some of these players who have impressed the past week. I know because you are a writer at Purple Row, you're just itching to talk about Chris Iannetta.
Well, there's two guys I want to talk about. Let me get the first one out of the way before I even mention Iannetta. Okay. The hot pitcher who we can finally put this to rest is Esmiel Rogers, because he finally won the fifth starter role officially.
Yeah, he had a great performance after being named starter as well.
He absolutely did. I remember I posted the game thread and saying basically, you know, you've been named the starter, so let's see what you can do. And then he came out and impressed, and definitely inspired confidence in a lot of the fan base, namely myself.
Yeah.
So, good for you, Esmiel. We'll be looking forward to seeing you pitching for the Rockies, and hopefully you just take the job and keep it, because I don't want to mess around with, you know, a rotation go-around this season.
Sure. Yeah, I'm excited for Esmiel Rogers. I'm encouraged. I'm hoping he'll do fine. There was a chance that they were going to delay his start an extra 3 days until the Pittsburgh series. It looks like with them choosing not to have an eighth bullpen member, what they're going to do is bring Esmiel along and go ahead and get him started on regular schedule. He'll probably pitch the second game of the LA series, which is the normal spot for the fifth starter. We could have avoided that because we have an off day between Arizona and LA. But I know that Jim Tracy, more so than at least Clint Hurdle seemed to, likes to keep his rotation at five, even when you can skip and get your ace back out there on normal rest.
Well, what was funny about it is the way he phrased it was that he doesn't like to overwork his starters.
he doesn't like to overwork them in a specific way, I guess.
Yeah, I whatever works. I mean, I almost spat whatever I was drinking out when I read that.
Yeah.
You lie. You lie like a rug, Jim Tracy.
You know he's saying, like, I plan to pitch Giannetta 118 pitches every day, and those will add up to that extra start, so I might as well just have Esmiel Rogers take on some of that role.
And then after Ubaldo goes and pitches those, you know, however many extra pitches, then he'll just put Matt Belisle in for the rest of the game.
Yeah. All
every start.
All three and a third innings of it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, every time. That's the Rockies' way. Overpitch poor Matt Belisle.
Matt Lindstrom's on the bench, like, why did you even acquire me?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, I'm getting paid.
Yeah. Leans back and drinks a soda or something.
Yeah, exactly. Lights up a cigarette, just like whatever.
So, do you have anything you want to talk about regarding Iannetta then?
Iannetta, it's you know, I'm obviously the fanboy, as everyone's seen over the you know, 2 years that I've been with Purple Row. But it should be noted that as of today, Ineta is batting 364 on the season. That's Cole Garner. I didn't tell that right. I was like, wait a minute. Those numbers aren't right at all. No, batting 355 with a 512 on-base percentage and a 548 slugging percentage.
It looks in today's game, we're actually, I'm doing a super crazy multitasking thing right now. I have one game on TV. I have one game next to the podcast recorder on my computer. So I'm like going crazy here. Ionetta today went 0 for 1. He got a walk and a strikeout. So
it should be noted that walk too was no freebie get the pitcher up walk. I mean, he worked a full count, fouled off about four pitches, then walked, then was sack bunted by Ubaldo, and then got caught in an awkward fielder's choice that should have been a 5-3 put out with Tavares batting, but Kuzmanov bottled the ball at third base, and so Ineta was charging for third, and he was able to dive in and get the tag on his leg right before he hit the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Good play by Kuzmanov, and a bit of an aggressive choice by Ineta, but I guess that's the mantra this season, is aggressive base running, whether or not it's effective. But, you know, it's, again, spring training numbers, blah, 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 but it's very encouraging to see Chris Ionetta, you know, getting hits, because outside of the two home runs, you know, with that 355 batting average, it's looking like, nine hits he had were singles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, not necessarily a good or bad thing in itself, but the fact is that he's getting hits, and they're not all, you know, bouncing to the corner of the wall in the outfield because he hit it so hard. He's hitting singles. He's getting contact. He's doing things well. And we're hoping that he can carry this hot streak into the season at Coors Field. Maybe playing in Salt River with the new facilities and everything, everything we're about to hear from Fisher will encourage Ionetta's swing to keep itself happy in spring training. And, you know, maybe he'll bat 300 and that would be pretty insane.
Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of progress he has to make in terms of winning people over, for sure. And it's just good to see him sort of owning his spot here and understanding now that, you know, he's 4 days away from being officially the starting catcher with nobody really behind him to usurp that spot. It looks like Jose Morales will be the backup.
He's been hitting well this spring, too. Jim Armstrong from the Post said that Morales might be the best hitting catcher in camp, and I kind of roll my eyes a little bit, but I guess out of the backup options, I mean, Morales hit well in Joe Mauer's absence in Minnesota, so maybe he can do it here as well. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to have an actual hitting catching tandem.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
The understanding I had of Jose Morales was that he was looked upon as a pretty good offensive option and maybe average defensively. It'll be interesting to see how he adjusts to that. And I mean, we've known for a while that he was probably going to be the choice simply out of convenience, but it is nice to know that he's put up a pretty decent spring, and has kind of won the spot anyway, so to speak. This is actually one quick note that I just noticed. Again, I just looked up the roster moves that they made today. They went ahead and optioned Pacheco to the Sky Sox. Which I didn't expect them to do. I expected them to put him back at double A. It should be noted that they can change that whenever they want. They can just move him to double A.
Yeah, once he's down, he's down.
Uh-huh, exactly. So
it should be, we should also keep in mind, too, from what David Ono, our the former Purple Row writer, has been telling us about Pacheco, he's been following him for quite a while here, along with a lot of our other farmhounds. But Pacheco seems to have kind of hit his ceiling in a sense. Not like he, you know, there's nowhere for you to go now. He seems to be right about where you'd expect his bat to be. It's just kind of refining his defensive game that they're really working on now. I mean, making sure he's comfortable at catcher, but then they might even start getting him at bats at other positions, which is, I think he's getting jerked around a lot here, but, you know, they're just making sure he gets playing time. So hopefully he can find a way to, if not excel, at least be passable at, you know, whatever positions they end up playing him at. So that way he retains his value by, even if it's as a super utility guy, that he's not a black hole defensively wherever he's playing.
Yeah, I was having this discussion in one of my transactions threads last week, that I thought that they were going to be giving him a great opportunity to play outside of catcher. I had kind of expected them to kind of cut down on his position there and really give him the opportunity to play some third, maybe play some other corners. And I'm just trying to think because his situation is a little tricky. They optioned Willing Rosario to double A, and there's still a chance that he might not break camp immediately. He might stick around for the extended stuff. So I had kind of assumed that Pacheco would be the number one catcher in Tulsa until Rosario was willing to begin rehab, and after that happened, I kind of expected Pacheco to get a few days or weeks of play around elsewhere while Rosario was taking catcher. But if they keep him at AAA, and they might not, that really will be interesting to see how they work him with Michael McHenry and with a lot of the other utility types they have around there, because there's a lot of heavy competition at AAA for position spots right now with people like Amezaga and Iribarren and so forth. So, I'm kind of excited to see where they end up playing him exactly.
Well, it's what makes me kind of excited about this whole playing time competition is that, you know, the minor leagues have just kind of been, they're just there, but it's kind of starting to show the depth of the organization that the AAA team is now a very competitive role to have. When the Rockies are effectively set for the next couple of years here, so now all the battles are going to be, you know, who's in the AAA rotation,
yep,
who's next up in line when someone gets hurt in the majors. And, you know, it's just a good thing to see that much, that much depth there that you actually have to do these competitions. You can't just say, whatever, we picked up this guy off the street, go ahead and play second or whatever.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week, how we have this kind of piling up of talent at the AAA level in certain areas especially. And, 3 years ago when I was first looking at the minor leagues just out of a curiosity, you know, we had players like Valerio de los Santos who were the third starter in the AAA rotation because not only did we not have enough prospects to fill that, we didn't have enough decent quadruple-A type players either. We had really complete filler material, if you will. And now we've got, you know, 10-ish players, 8 to 10 players who are contending for spots in that rotation. So it's certainly changed from that perspective. I tend to think that our upper level depth, not looking below kind of the double A area, we have really good depth in pretty much every area except left-handed pitching and maybe outfield. We're going to have Blackmon at the top of the did you laugh at Blackmon? Yeah.
You pronounced Blackmon. Charles
it was Blackmon. Yeah.
Shooting lasers out of his eyes and stuff. Blackmon.
That was a very phonetic interpretation of that name. Basically, he kind of represents the top tier of the outfield depth right now, and then Tim Wheeler will be in double A probably. And then with left-handed pitching, it's still kind of our empty spot. Of course, below Reynolds and Morales, when it comes to relief, our closest option is Rex Brothers, and after that, it probably kind of drops.
But you got Eric Stoltz as well, don't forget him.
Well, Stoltz I don't expect to stay, honestly.
You don't?
No, I think he's gonna go back to Japan.
That makes sense now that he's been optioned, but I mean, for the time being, until we actually get the confirmation, I'm gonna assume that he's still on the depth list, and if Brothers isn't quite responding during the AAA season as well as they'd like, that he'd be the number one depth call-up for lefty reliever. Yes. But like you said, Japan is still an option for him, so I don't know. I
won't rule him out. I just – my understanding of his out clause is that the offer's already there, and I don't know if he has really any incentive to pitch AAA, especially out of the bullpen even. There's still room in that rotation, so he might find himself in there as well. I'm not 100% sure. That's just completely an assumption on my part. And then when it comes to the starting, there's Stoltz and Greg Smith, basically, who have reasonable chances of landing a rotation spot down there as well. So
I sure hope Smith hasn't fallen off so much that he's not a rotation candidate for the minor leagues either.
Well, he is a candidate. I don't know if he's going to get the spot. He's still my favorite for the spot, but that's assuming that, again, that Eric Stoltz is not with the organization anymore.
Yeah.
We'll be finding out about all this stuff in a couple days. The people without clauses who have out clauses will be activating them and so forth, except John Main. John Main's out clause isn't until June. So he's ours for a while.
That's a nice card to have in your pocket, though, if in the event that things go absolutely haywire, is someone like John Main.
Yeah, he has more major league experience than all the other AAA people, probably combined, has to be combined.
It's moments like these where I wonder how much the fluff pieces about players really loving the organization and so on and so forth are, you know, how much of it is just people saying, yes, I love insert team here because I am playing with the team I am playing with right now, you know, and how much of it is actually, wow, this facility is great and everyone's been really awesome and welcoming and man, I kind of hope I stick around here because blah, 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 blah. It leads me to, you know, just wonder how much of it is meant to spin up some favor toward the organization and how much of it is literally quoting players saying, wow, awesome, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're 15 minutes in now. I think I'm going to go ahead and start the conversation with Andrew Fisher here. So we will be back in after we've spoken with Andrew. So we've got another staff writer from PurpleRow.com on the line right now, Mr. Andrew Fisher. Andrew, how are you today?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm a little exhausted from jumping on inflatable castles this afternoon, but mostly pretty good.
Is there a story behind that?
Joys of parenthood.
Nice.
Joys of parenthood, that's all.
Okay. So Andrew is one of the lucky folks on the blog who got the chance to head down to Scottsdale and see the new facility. This spring, you spent a week down there. You saw 9 games, is that right?
Yeah, 9 games, 8 days, 7 nights. So it was as jam-packed in as possible, and I only had to use 5 days of vacation. It's absolutely the way to do it.
Nice work.
So
those 9 games, are they all major league games, or were there some of them minor league games that aren't being recorded in the Cactus League standings?
Actually, they were all major league games. The first day we were there was Saturday the 12th, and they had a doubleheader that day at Salt Rivers. So we just managed to pick the right time to maximize our game viewage.
That was the day-night doubleheader, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the facility. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are interested in, you know, how it looks and feels, how it compares to the old place. And I mean, we've heard a lot of rave reviews from people, but, we haven't talked to anybody yet who's actually been down there. So what can you tell us?
Well, there's really not any point to comparing it down to High Corbett. They're not even close to being the same type of facility, but, there's 13 fields. For the Rockies side, they have a field specifically for bunting practice with a mound in the center and 4 backstops on the corners so that there can be bunting happening in 4 different directions. And there's 2 fields that have the outfield walls built to the exact projections of Coors Field for practice in the outfield. And there's 4 minor league fields. And on the 4 minor league fields, you can just walk right up to the backstop on all of them. Last week we had a video of Tyler Matzek start back on a minor league field, and that was from somebody writing a blog, but anybody could have stood right there and taken that same video if they had wanted to. There's, when you walk in the entrance on the Rocky side, there's batting cages lining the left side of the ramp up to the right field corner of the main ballpark there, and usually before and after games there's somebody in there taking batting practice, and if you get there early enough before a night game or well early enough before a day game, then usually the starting lineup's in there taking batting practice, and that's the time to go there for sure. If you show up immediately before or after, you end up with minor league coaching staff taking batting practice or some minor league pitchers bunting or something. So, anything specific you wanted to know about the area or?
Well, do they have any other fields specifically devoted to making outs? Because with the bunting fields, I mean, I guess that's a good practice making outs. Do they have a good sack fly field or maybe a ground out to the right side field?
I'm sure one of the minor league fields can be used for that practice. Most of them just roll over on ground balls a lot anyway.
Did you, while you were down there, take a look at any of the Diamondbacks area, or did you stick to the Rockies side?
You know, I never did get over there. I stuck to the Rockies side. I know it's fairly comparable in the design. One of the fields on the clover leaf of the minor league fields is turned in the other direction. But otherwise, it's pretty much a mirror image of the Rockies with a couple shifts in the where the fields are. But it's pretty much the same equal facility on both sides.
Yeah, as I recall, they have that backwards field in the Rockies cloverleaf because it allows people from the deck of the regular stadium to get a good look at the home plate area of one of those fields. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually right by two of the main concession stands there that you can just stand and wait in line and watch players that you don't recognize taking batting practice out there during the game. So
that's cool.
So do this field and the facilities have you mentioned the minor league fields and the access to watch minor league pitchers doing stuff or whatever. Do the entire complex seem to have more of a fan accessible feel to it, or just certain areas, or what? Tell me a bit more about that.
Well, we saw a lot of pictures early on when spring training was starting of the players working out with that pretty workout facility behind them and the Rockies logo on the glass building, and that is not somewhere where fans can go and hang out and really watch. That's kind of hidden behind the clubhouse and separated away from the rest of the complex a little bit. And immediately next to that is one of the two Coors Field knockoff fields. And from there, you can kind of just stand on a sidewalk and see over while they're practicing, but you can't really get that close. And then from there, there's a walkway that goes underneath the pedestrian bridge into the building that goes out to the batting cages and minor league fields and everything. And I thought that was an interesting touch because at High Corbett, it was pretty evident that a lot of the players were really frustrated with just how much fan interaction there was. And the Rockies are really good with fan interaction. I don't know any player that I would be scared to walk up and talk to except for Giambi, but that's a totally different issue. But to get to the practice fields at High Corbett, the players would be walking across minor league fields or parking lots anywhere to just kind of make sure that they were on time while fans were barraging them for autographs. And at this point, they're able to still go through there. Fans can still see them and say hi. And if players want to, they can stop in that little passageway and sign balls and throw them up to the fans. But they're still able to get back and forth without really being impeded too much when they actually have something that they're really needing to do. So
the accessibility
really
seemed
to be something. The accessibility is still 90 to 95% there. And on the minor league fields, you can still walk through all the minor leaguers. And I ended up taking a picture of a bunch of minor leaguers taking orange slices in between workouts, and I tweeted it, and one of the players that I was following tweeted back to me and said that was actually him playing with his iPhone on my picture. And so we were all right there. I actually ended up talking to the agent of Kyle Parker, last year's first round draft pick, and he just kept going on and on about how incredible the fan access is at that facility and that nowhere else he's ever been has been that way. And he's out of an agency in Atlanta, so a lot of his players are actually in the Grapefruit League, and there's not too many out here in Arizona, but it's still by far the most fan accessible facility.
Was he painting the fan accessibility in a positive light, or?
No, he definitely said it was a positive light. He was a little concerned about trying to find Kyle Parker back there just because there's so many players milling around and there's fans and everything, but it was definitely a positive thing, and he thought that it was really good for fans to be able to be out there and see it from the ground up.
What can you tell us about the main stadium and what sorts of activities and so forth that there are to do during a game, and also, you know, how the seating is, how the lawns are, and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, there's actually three merchandise stores in the park, as opposed to one in a lot of the older parks. And one's in the right field corner, one's in the center back behind center field, and the one's behind left field, and there's people going in and out of that during the game at all times. So there's that. There's a little wiffle ball field in the right field corner by the Rockies store, and there's constantly kids playing there. We actually did not sit in the lawn for any of the games at Salt River, but it's pretty comparable to any of the other ones you might have seen. That's just a nice grassy embankment beyond the outfield wall, and you can put out a blanket and lay down, and I actually rather enjoy those seats. You get a really good view of the park and lay down in the sun, and it's the cheapest seats in the park. And so I would highly recommend that, especially if that's the first time you're going. The only downside of that is that you're in the sun the entire time, but the people who built that park were intelligent enough to build three free sunscreen stations with five dispensers at each of them, and so if you forgot your sunscreen, you can lather up and be just fine.
Yeah,
I
saw those. Some people tweeted pictures of those, and it seems like such an obvious thing, but it's something I never thought about before. It's really kind of a clever idea. I don't know if any of the other parks even have something like that.
Yeah, I've been to all but two in the Cactus League, and that's the first time I've ever seen it. So there's another plus for Salt River.
Yeah, so some good foresight on their part. In terms of did you sit in a variety of places around the stadium? You said you weren't on the lawn, but did you get a good look at different angles from the seating?
Fairly, yeah. We were on the third base side and the first base side, and actually the park is oriented just right so that we were about two-thirds of the way up behind either dugout on both sides. But by about 1:30 in the afternoon, which is the middle of the first inning, the sun was actually behind the sunshade, and so at least half of the seated areas were in the shade for 90%+ of the game, and by the end of the game, everybody that was in a seat is in the shade. So that was really built really well, and so I wouldn't be surprised if that park is used for something at some point during the summer, because with the shading like that, that's not really that really wouldn't be an issue with the sun. And in our last game there, I actually got a little bit of a donation from a falcon who was perched on a speaker directly above me. And within 10 seconds before I even figured out what was going on, there was an attendant who came down and whisked me away to go up to a private suite area right up by the press box. And so I got to see the game from there. So I have a couple pictures of that. There's there's a Pepsi
above
the press box.
Hold on, before you go on forward here, are you telling me that a bird crapped on you and you got to sit in the suite?
Yes.
That's phenomenal. I was standing in line outside of Coors Field one day and pigeon crapped all over me. I didn't get to go sit in no suite.
Well, apparently what happened is there was a falcon that used to nest in that area before they went and built the baseball facilities there. And so it went up so quickly. This is essentially the first spring that anything has been there, and she's very confused. She's just perched up there, and I'm not really sure if she's just taking out anger on everybody or if she's just trying stubbornly say that that's her home. But this has apparently been happening for many games during the spring on the first base side, and so they just have somebody perched there waiting, and if somebody gets shot, then they go down there and they have a suite reserved for people. There were five people on that game that got hit.
The bird crap suite. That's
they kind of know how to. Yep, they know how to take care of their patrons, I suppose. So I kind of got a good look everywhere. Yeah, it is, but it is protected since it's a falcon, so they can't really do anything about it. So
yeah,
they're a little stumped.
Were there any other benefits of the suite besides just a better spot with the like concessions up there or something special for? Or is it just like, hey, come sit in somewhere that's not bird crap? I mean, either way, it's completely awesome that they're doing this. I'm just thinking, like, how cherry does this get for you?
Well, there was an inside seating, and then there was outside cushion seating on the deck, and soda and water and an ice chest and a large LCD TV to watch college basketball if you wanted to. And so there was all of that. There's a menu with very highly priced food items and cheese trays and things that we could have ordered if we wanted to, I'm sure. But so yeah, I got a pretty good look from all different angles of the field, and it's very good. I actually didn't really bother with trying to get autographs, so I can't really say how difficult it was or not to get them down on the field before the game. But there was always a few players down there before the game.
I saw that you did get a ball signed by a couple of players.
Yeah, that's a story about the hazard of
numbers,
Of numbers, yeah. There was we were at the Oakland Field, which is Phoenix Municipal in Phoenix, and there was a lefty warming up in the bullpen. He was number 53 and a tall, skinny lefty. He's throwing curveballs, and he's got in the program. Number 53 is Christian Friedrich. I'd never really looked up that close to his face. This guy looked a little bit different than I was expecting, but that sort of happens a lot. And so Jason Kaufman, also known as J-Rock, he's on Purple Row, went down, and I'm not sure if he actually asked if he was Christian Friedrich, but I heard people actually yelling out to Christian, and he came and signed people's balls, and I looked at it, and it looked like a JM, and, you know, whatever. Ryan Spielberg looks like 3SE on his signature, so you never know. After signing so many signatures, it might be completely different than what one would expect. But I ended up tweeting that picture and sort of asking who it was, and it ended up it was Josh Mook.
Mickey. Josh Mickey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no idea how to pronounce it.
Oh, no, I totally don't blame you. I didn't know how to pronounce that one for a long time either.
Yeah. But he's a Triple A journeyman starting pitcher, and so he was wearing number 53, and numbers change all of the time in the minor leagues, and it's pretty tough to try and identify people without the names on the backs.
Yeah, as far as
I got Doug Bernier and Matt Daly mixed up 2 years ago, so.
As far as I could tell, when you were down there, Christian Friedrich had probably just been reassigned, and, they obviously bring, you know, 3 or 4 minor league camp guys along with him to every road game, and they probably just brought along Josh Mickey and were like, hey, we have these uniforms that happen to fit you, you'll be number 53 today, and, Yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty close to the same
Phil Unknown is gonna come. But then Phil Unknown will come in and be like, hey, where's my jersey?
Yeah. Number 99, Unknown, or something.
they actually print Unknown. ? on the... Yeah, you had mentioned that you saw that they'd put Unknown up on the scoreboard at one point. Those media folks are supposedly given the accurate day's numbers, or... They're supposed to be. They aren't just given the media guide and like, you know, go off this. So I don't know why they didn't get that information, but you got to feel bad. It was Tug Hewlett, I think, that was printed as Unknown, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And I think it's probably just that he ran out and was taking ground balls before anyone saw his number. And so they couldn't really figure it out until he had come back into the dugout. But
gotcha. So
he's kind of got a unique build.
Mm-hmm. He's starting at second in one of the games today.
Yes.
So let's talk about the players a little bit, your impressions of what you saw from some of the play. You tweeted a lot of praise regarding Rex Brothers in particular, so I'm wondering if you can give a little bit of a report on what you saw. Brothers was reassigned to minor league camp today, so he won't be making the team, and it was a long shot anyway, but his spring was certainly one of the most impressive from some of the young guys. So what impressions did you get from him?
Yeah, well, I was really excited to actually see Brothers pitch this spring because he was doing well in spring, and I was kind of curious to see whether he was just striking out the double-A players from the Pirates team or whoever, and just building up stats against really weak competition. But when he was drafted, he was pegged to be a really quick riser through the minor leagues as a relief pitcher because he had two pretty close to major league ready pitches already. And the knock on him has always been that he just doesn't have enough fastball command, and that's what's been holding him back. If he had fastball command last year, he probably could have been in the majors last year. And if he had fastball command now and we didn't have those two lefties already pegged for the majors, he'd probably be in there now. And he really did have a high walk rate in the minor leagues last year. But the one I'm really struggling to think of another pitcher who threw strikes with more consistency while I was in Scottsdale than Rex Brothers. He was constantly ahead of hitters. He was firing 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and pretty wicked sliders. And just there was never a batter that really looked that comfortable. I think I probably saw 9 at-bats, and he struck out 6 batters, including Joey Votto, who looked like he had no interest in facing Rex Brothers. So there's a lot of people who are trying to place a Billy Wagner comp on him, which is probably as close as you can get with comps. He's a diminutive lefty who throws really hard and has a very good slider and has closer potential. I don't want to plan on us having Billy Wagner, but I will say that I think right now he has the best stuff of any lefty reliever in the organization. And if he can just keep that fastball command going, then he's going to be a pretty big part of the bullpen this year eventually. And I don't know whether that's going to be at the expense of Matt Reynolds or Franklin Morales or actually a right-hander, but if he's throwing like he was throwing in spring training, he needs to be on the team pretty soon.
The lefties elsewhere in spring training, Reynolds and Morales, did you get a chance to see either of them pitch at all?
Yeah, I actually saw both of them. I wasn't really around as much when they were pitching. They ended up putting Brothers in earlier in games, and by later in the games, I was usually getting food or something.
Uh-huh.
Matt Reynolds, from what I could tell, was pretty much just having difficulty locating his pitches low in the zone, and he's throwing them up in the zone, and he doesn't have phenomenal stuff to get away with that. He's always been about location and deception, and I think some of that suffered when he got the ball up, and you have aggressive hitters in spring training who aren't going to let a high pitch go just because they're not expecting it, and so he was kind of victimized from that. But I still do think that he belongs in the major league bullpen to start off this year based on the option status that we have with Franklin Morales.
Mm-hmm.
And Morales was actually looking fairly good the whole week I was there until the very last day when he got pegged for a couple of runs against the Reds down in Goodyear. But I think I'm less confident in our left-handed relief situation going into spring training than I had been before spring training started. But still, we're starting to get a little bit spoiled with a really good Rockies bullpen getting better every year. And this really is a pretty strong lefty duo that I think we have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just remember a couple years back when we had Ray King as the primary lefty out of the pen. I mean, things have definitely improved from at least those days. I mean, my thought last week, at least I believe it was last week we talked about it, was that Tracy was going to use his right-handed ladder to the ninth inning as the meat of the outs being gotten, and then just try to use Reynolds and Morales to come in and basically be lefty one out guys, loogies.
Right.
I was about to say, did I lose everyone there?
No. I heard that.
What do you think about that, Andrew? I mean, if you're the one with a lack of confidence in them, and I don't necessarily disagree with that because I think I expressed a similar lack of confidence. Do you think that's going to be the use, or do you think he's going to try to leave him in for innings and then watch righties, you know, post an 850 ops against them?
I honestly am not sure. I'd like to see Matt Reynolds face right-handers too. He's got the deception to get right-handed batters out as well. And I just don't really like the idea of having two loogies in the bullpen. That doesn't seem like the most effective way to do it. And so I guess out of those two, if I were to limit one of them, it would be Morales. But I think it would be far better if we had a seventh inning where we're going through three lefties in a row, that we could throw Matt Reynolds out there for a full inning and count on that.
So how about the offensive side of things? Were there any players that impressed you in that regard that you saw down there?
Well, to be honest, I was kind of keeping my eye on a lot of minor leaguers and prospects that mm-hmm. I don't get a chance to see the most. So I didn't really watch Jonathan Herrera's swings as often as, say, Ben Paulson when he was in there. And so I guess from the offensive side, Ben Paulson was actually far more exciting than I had thought. He was pretty much scalding the ball whenever he came in the games and in batting practice. And I believe I had seen that he gained 10 to 15 pounds this offseason to try and gain some extra strength and extra power that would help his projection as a first baseman in major leagues. And so it remains to be seen whether that's going to actually come into play in minor league season this year. But I'm really interested to see how he'll turn out this year in Tulsa. I actually asked Kevin Goldstein on Twitter last week when he thought Ben Paulson might be an actual major league first baseman. That's what a lot of people want to know, is who's going to replace Todd Helton. And at this current rate, if Ben Paulson continues to grow, he could potentially be a replacement in 2014 or so. But Goldstein's response was that he was going to bet that Paulson would never be a major league first baseman. And I think a lot of that is based on his draft status and his year last year in Modesto. But I wouldn't be surprised if he does take a bigger step forward this year than some people are expecting. Actually, on the major league side, Todd Helton really did impress me when I was watching him. His timing was much, much better than last spring. You could tell last spring that he just was behind on pitches. He was moving a little bit slowly, and we were kind of told that the idea was that he was just kind of working into it slowly, and they were trying to baby him, and that's why. But he was going to be better in the majors when the season started, and that didn't really come to pass. And this year he's been working a lot more, and he's been in games a lot more, and he just seems a lot more limber. He's running harder. He's on every pitch and just hitting really well, and he looks so much more like the hitter that we knew in 2009 than he did last year. And that's a really big thing for me, especially considering he's slated right now to be hitting directly behind Tulowitzki. So that was something that was impressive. I saw Kyle Parker take batting practice on the minor league fields, and it was against live pitching, so he actually didn't hit that well. He didn't barrel too many balls up, but I was just blown away at how big that guy's upper body is. And I mean, I could stand behind home plate and pick him out among 50 guys walking around in the outfield, because he's just that big and strong. And I can see why he was Baseball America's number one power prospect in last year's draft. So I'm really interested to see what he does down in Asheville this year with that short outfield wall. He could really have a pretty good season now that he's actually focusing on baseball. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm certainly excited to see what he ends up doing in a pro season as well. So I'll have my eye on him. You said you think he'll be in Asheville. I would probably agree. I don't think that they'll hold him back. I don't know exactly what reason there would be to do that, but we'll probably be seeing him for a full season, you think?
Probably so. I wouldn't be shocked if they hold him back. I was only able to see that one day, so I'm not really sure. I couldn't get a good grasp on how well he was adjusting to 100% baseball life. But if he's still having difficulty in batting practice against live pitching, they might hold him back to get him more into a baseball shape and more into a baseball throwing motion rather than the short-armed football toss that he was used to using in football. So I wouldn't be altogether shocked if he's an extended spring for April, but He'll be in Asheville pretty soon either way.
Right. So do you have any other thoughts or things that you'd like to bring up before we let you go?
Well, I'd say that one of the really underrated things of Salt River that we haven't really heard a lot of feedback about is that it's in Scottsdale, but it's kind of on the outer edge. It's really accessible on the 101 interstate loop, but it's fairly unobstructed in its views around the area, and you can see Camelback Mountain, which is actually on the other side of Phoenix from the seats up around the press box and the fan deck up there, and then there's just mountains all over the place, and it's a really, really beautiful place to sit and watch a game. It's pretty expertly located in that it's very convenient and it's very accessible from traffic from all over Phoenix, and yet it still kind of feels like you're a little bit outside on the outskirts, and it's not quite as busy, which was something I was really not expecting.
Well, it sounds like you had a great time down there. Your impressions of the facility and the area and the players sound pretty positive. So, Andrew, thanks again for agreeing to join us and share your thoughts on your experiences down there.
Of course.
And
anytime.
Yeah, and we'll be glad to have you back again sometime.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, guys, that was Andrew Fisher. We're just back to wrap up the show, and we've got one other little topic we want to talk about, specifically regarding the depth as it relates to some of the unusual but potentially useful diversity we have amongst our infield candidates. And Andrew Martin here just before the show kind of said that it's almost like everybody is in one sense or another a utility player. Basically, it's funny how we are looking at a situation now where we're seeing a lot of players, including Jose Lopez, at one point thought to be pretty much very likely to land a regular second base job, is kind of floating around playing a lot of third base in place of Stewart and so forth. And I mean, I know there's concern with Stewart because he hasn't had as much time to get ready as everybody else, but it's just interesting to note how much movement around there has been going on, because we have a lot of players who can play multiple positions in there.
Well, think about this. The fact, if we had to face a real tough lefty and it's a Todd Helton off day, they could put out an infield of entirely right-handed hitters by playing Wigginton at first base, Herrera at second base, Tulowitzki obviously at short base, and then Jose Lopez at third base. And everyone thought he was going to be coming in to play this, be the starting second baseman, but he always struggled at second base in Seattle. And so when they first acquired him, my thought was, oh good, we got another utility guy, what are we going to do now? And then the sentiment seemed to turn to who belongs at second base, but it seems we're drifting back to my original thought of, oh great, another utility guy. But in a way, it makes sense, because if Stewart shows that he can't hit lefties, I really want to see what this new and improved Carney Lansford swing has done for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he can actually return to his minor league form of, I can hit everybody everywhere and hit them for average as well. Because, you know, a few years back, Ringlesby had said that Stewart would probably be one of the better hitters for average. But, you know, he hasn't obviously put that together yet. And, if he does end up showing that he can't hit lefties, you have Wigginton and Jose Lopez who can play third base. Now with Lopez, I mean, you want to think about him as a second baseman, but for starters, he's not defensively optimal there. Herrera would be the better defensive option. And Lopez actually responded really well to playing third base in Seattle last year when they acquired Sean Figgins. So, and it's, again, very small sample, and it's just 1 year of seeing him take chances at third base, but Rank has already, you know, has a lot of good things to say about him at third base. He moves well to his right, his left, he has strong arm, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, if he can play third and second, even if he's worse at second, I mean, that just adds to the positional depth, and it keeps Ty Wigginton away from second base.
Yeah.
The more of that, the better.
Certainly.
Would you rather see, no, let me just ask you this,
sure,
for the fun of it. Would you rather see Wigginton at second base or in right field?
Right field. Because,
right field?
Only because, to me, we have more depth at second base, and, basically, if you're playing Wigginton at second base over Lopez and Herrera, I don't understand. it seems like one of the two of them would be more optimal, and there's no reason, because they're such different players, that they would like both be somewhere else. Unless you have some really bad situation where Herrera has to be playing shortstop or something like that.
Not for Herrera's sake, but God forbid that someone not to
something have, exactly. You know, I feel like, worst case scenario with Wigginton in right field, it's probably not going to be, I know he has more experience at second base, but I feel like he'd probably play the position of right field a little bit better. But hey, he's new to the organization, so I am certainly no expert on his skill set. So I think the ideal answer is I'd rather see him at neither of those places as little as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'd rather see him at first and third, and that's
yes,
it as
yes.
well. But
I think he's going to wind up playing most of his time at first base. I think he's going to be filling in for Helton twice a week there as a starter.
Which makes sense, but I mean, for the amount of money they paid him, we're going to be expecting to see him getting reps over Seth Smith, over Ian Stewart. At least some amount. It kind of depends on who shows they can hit the bad side of the platoon better, mm-hmm. and that person will stick.
Yeah.
And remember, they also have Spilborgs as the righty option against lefties in right field.
Right, and I think he will obviously be the first one that has gone to every single time with the outfield. I would hope so. I don't want to see Ty Wigginton in the outfield over Ryan Spilborgs, basically.
Unless their bats are really pushing the issue.
Right, if there are other concerns to bring up, such as streaks or pitching matchups or something like that, maybe that's different. But I
feel like we've talked about Spilborg very precious little this year, except for his at-bat music and facial hair configuration.
Well, he's having a great spring, too.
Yeah, he is. I mean, it's not quite as flashy as some of the other guys out there, but it's definitely a solid spring, and I mean...
Somebody in the comments, I can't remember who it was, asked if there was a chance that Black Mon... would make the team over Spilborgs. And I was just confused because, you know, even though there's reasons to bring him up sooner rather than later because he also had a great spring, when it comes to Spilborgs, he hasn't done anything to deserve, like, a release.
A demotion, no.
Yeah.
Spilborgs isn't in competition for his job. It's just more defining his job as a fourth or maybe the fifth outfielder, although Wigginton is effectively the fifth outfielder. Right. With the, you know... Two of the guys in front of him, obviously Cargo and Dexter Fowler, can both play center field. And Spilly played center field in 2006 and 2007. And he wasn't very good at it, but he was... I mean, Wigginton's not very good at second base, right field, or left field either. So it's one of those things we're going to just kind of have to see what comes along.
Well, and that's one of the nice things about having Carlos Gonzalez as well. I mean, if we need to remove Dexter Fowler... Carlos Gonzalez can become center fielder.
Yeah, exactly. Then you have Smith, Billy, and Cargo, or Wigginton, or whatever.
Or Jonathan Herrera.
Or Johnny Herrera. Oh, boy.
They put him in left field yesterday, and I mean, he looked a little uncomfortable, obviously.
I don't understand. I get the idea, let's see what we can expand upon everyone's versatility, but come on, the guy's a shortstop and second baseman. What are you doing putting him in the outfield?
We also, though, remember we put Melvin Mora in center field last spring.
Oh, that was a debacle. I remember just a routine fly ball, but a tough fly ball that he just, he had no idea what he was doing, and I wanted to go down there and say, are you trying to break the man?
Well, of course, he never ended up playing center field during the season, so...
Oh, no, but the point stands.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's just... I wouldn't be too worried about seeing Herrera in the outfield. I think that he will be kind of like what Clint Barmas was to the outfield. Like, okay, we've burned Wigginton as a pinch hitter. Dexter Fowler just hit the wall and has to come out of the game. And Ryan Spilborgs is sick. Who are we going to put out there now?
Oh. I'm picturing the Mr. Burns softball team where Ken Griffey had, you know, a giganticism from drinking the nerve tonic. Roger Clemens thought he was a chicken. Ozzie Smith disappeared into the mystery spot. Uh-huh. Steve Sachs had leukemia. Who else was there?
Jose Canseco.
Jose Canseco was rescuing everyone's furniture. I think that Steve Sachs, it was Mike Scioscia who had leukemia, and Steve Sachs, he was arrested for every crime ever in Springfield and New York.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of these things would really involve, you know, those levels of incompetence to happen to this team for right. some of these other situations to come to play.
Well, I know you've got some plans to get to, so I think we'll wrap up for today. We will be back next week on the 4th, which is an off day in between the opening series this weekend with Arizona, and then we'll have two games against L.A. On the 5th and 6th before leaving for Pittsburgh on the first road trip of the season. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week. Take care.